So, yes, my name is Kendra Fletcher, and my husband and I are those crazy people with a big homeschooling family. We have 8 children. Our oldest 3 have graduated. Woo! And actually, our oldest recently said, I need my birth certificate and my Social Security card. Can you guys? And my husband said, yes, please, take them. Take them all. So he's 23 and completely on his own and, you know, job, house, what, not house, apartment, roommate, all of that. And it's beautiful. It's just wonderful. So our 21-year-old is he'll be a junior next year at Grand Canyon University in Phoenix. We live in California, so that's just a 12-hour drive to Phoenix for us. And then we have an 18-year-old who took a gap year this year because he didn't quite know what he wanted to do, and he'll be majoring in biology in the fall, just in our junior college, so he can economically transfer somewhere. That's what he wants to do. We have 2 girls in high school, a daughter who's finishing up her 6th grade year, a son who's finishing 3rd grade, and then we have a little special needs 8-year-old boy who's about 4 years old mentally. So that is our crazy, crazy family. And I will let you know that once upon a time, 19 years ago, I was a brand new homeschooler. So how many of you are brand new to this? Okay. This is a workshop that gets lots of new people because that vendor hall, is it not overwhelming? Yeah? Okay. I remember standing there and being like, Matthew, what? Actually, I don't think Matthew C. was a thing when we started homeschooling, but like, how do I know? How do I know if I want to do Saxon or teaching textbooks or Rod and Staff Math or Matthew C.? I don't know. I've never even heard of these things before, right? So how do I choose this? And that's what I'm hopefully going to help you do today, is at least walk in there and be like, okay, I can take a breath and know that God has my back, and we're going to be able to do this thing, and it's not going to be this monumental failure, all right? I remember years ago hearing, this is how old I am, on cassette, Sally Clarkson talking about homeschooling and raising her kids or whatever, and she said, you know, when you get to heaven, God's not going to ask you which math curriculum you used. And that was like, oh, light bulb moment. We're just going to use what works for us to the glory of God. Amen? Okay. So my main goal today is to really help you. And my favorite thing to do when I speak anywhere, from my hometown to wherever else has asked me to come, is to one-on-one get to what you need, okay? So I am available. My husband and I have this podcast. It's been up on iTunes for a couple of years. We have a booth. There's nothing in it because it's just a podcast, but we're sitting in there. So if you need to come to me at any time this evening, tomorrow, and say, hey, you said this, I don't understand, you know, and I'm here, okay? I'm available. So that's what I love to do. The first thing I want to talk about, hopefully to equip you and make you not feel so overwhelmed, is to just think about what your goals are, okay? And if you have a piece of paper, you can write down maybe your children's names, who's going to be homeschooled this fall. Write them down, and what are those goals for that child in particular? You may have different goals. You're probably going to have different goals for the 4-year-old than you would for the 6-year-old, okay? So 3 things. Oh, would help to turn this on. I had to move my laptop because it fell off the podium last time. And I couldn't breathe when it did. There we go. Okay, so educational goals, spiritual goals, character goals. What are some things you want to see down the pike? All right? I think sometimes those educational goals are a little easier to define. Do you agree? Like, okay, we're going to touch on phonics this year with the 5-year-old, or we're going to learn our math facts or whatever. So educational goals for each child. And obviously, I'm not asking you to like have it all written down right now, but these are some things you want to think about. What are some spiritual goals? We were talking about a child who struggles with perfectionism. You know, what are some things you're seeing in your kids that may be a character issue as well? Do you want your kids to learn the books of the Bible this year? Is that something you need to tackle? Do you want them to really memorize verses on a certain topic? I have a daughter, a 12-year-old, who struggles with anxiety. Not like clinical anxiety, but just she's a worrier. Everything, oh, I don't like to go to the beach because it just scares me that one time the wave, you know, took me under. Okay, really? So everything she worries about, and I asked one of her siblings to just look up a bunch of verses on worry, you know, 25 verses and give me the references. And so that was a little project that child got to do. And I just had her copy them one fall. You know, like, hun, that's going to be your copy work this fall. Just want you to get these words going in your head and your heart. So what are some spiritual goals you see for some of your kids? And then character goals. The perfectionism is a great example. I have eight lazy children. So I don't know, you know, sins of the mother maybe? I don't know. But my kids are lazy by and large. My adult kids, they're doing great. But man, some of these, like boys especially, I hate to say it, but my five boys, they just don't see what needs to get done. If I tell them, they're usually willing, but they do not see it, or do they want to get up and do it? So we've worked long and hard on that, and my girls as well. You know, when you drop a dish in the sink and walk on, that's laziness. Let's work on that. Hey, stop dropping your dish in the sink, you know. So what are some of those character goals that you have for them this year as well? All right, so now that you maybe are thinking in that direction, okay, hopefully what you can do is walk into a vendor hall or look at a website or a curriculum catalog and say, I have some goals here, okay? I can narrow it down. So for a child who maybe needs to be a little more independent, like that's a goal we're working on, then I need to choose a curriculum that isn't mom-heavy, mom-dependent. I need that child to be working on a writing curriculum or something that they can sort of do on their own with some guidance, but doesn't need me to be there teaching. Okay, do you see? So, or if I'm teaching a child to read, specifically if I have to teach a child to read, that is a mom-heavy activity. There's no way around it. I've got to be sitting next to that little one, and we're working on our phonograms, and we're working on, sounding out words together and things like that. So that's going to change maybe what I'm doing with my other kids that year. If I was nursing a baby and teaching somebody to read, well, forget it. It was just crazy. And in fact, my 14-year-old, when she was five, I had a three-year-old, and then I had a baby that I ended up miscarrying, but I was pregnant that year. And I thought, I can't teach this child to read this year. I'm going to go crazy. So I'm just not going to do that. I'm just going to read aloud a lot to her, and we're going to do some of that. And guess what happened? She taught herself to read all by herself. Now, that may not have been any of my other kids, but she just was determined, and she figured it out, and there she went. And it was fantastic. But that year, I had to change goals. I had to change sort of how we were doing things or what I was choosing to do. There were seasons of wonderful projects like sugar cookie maps of India and wonderful nature walks and lap books and all kinds of things. Then there were seasons of I'm drowning, and so I'm going to put a book on audio, or we're going to do Mystery of History on audio. I'm going to push play and fold laundry while you guys take notes or color the pages, all right? So that's part of what we're thinking about, too. What are the curriculums that I can focus in on, narrow in on, that are going to be really good for the goals we're going for this year for each child, okay? So what else needs to be considered while you are looking at curriculum? What's going to happen in your life this year that you can predict? There's all kinds of wonderful things that God drops in our laps that we can't predict. But are you moving this year? Are you changing jobs? Are you adding a baby by adoption or birth? Are you taking care of an elderly parent? What is going on in your life that might change all of the homeschooling paradigm, okay? So finding curriculum that matches your lifestyle and what's going on in your life is going to make things a lot easier for you as well, all right? So maybe right now is a good time to jot down some life events that you want to remember. Remember, we're moving across the country in September. Let's not start school then. Things like that. One year, my husband and I will take the kids on vacation in September because we're homeschoolers and we can do that. And I was expecting our sixth. She was due in December. And we were driving back home, and all of a sudden, I just start crying. I can't do this. I can't start school next week. I'm exhausted, and I'm not prepared. And my husband, in his great guy wisdom, said, so start in October. It's like, right, I can do that. I'm a homeschooler. I can start in October. And so we started in October, and guess when we finished? May. It didn't make any difference. For whatever reason, God allowed that year to just wrap itself up at its normal time. So what's going on in your life, and how do things maybe need to change with what's going on? Okay. All right, very briefly, I want you to think too about learning styles. I know that's talked about a lot in the homeschool community. Some people think they're very important, some people think they don't. But I want to challenge you to think not only about maybe how your child learns, but think about how you teach, Mom. All right? I am not a craft mom. I'm horrible at crafts. And I tried really hard to be that homeschooling mom that did awesome Pinterest stuff. So bad. My kids have epic stories of epic failures where we just laugh at the things we attempted. So I'm not going to choose the big craft-heavy curriculum. That's not a fit for me. But do I, you know, other things I'm really good at, I love, you know, this thing or that thing, and I love to write, and we love to go places, and that's a fit for me, all right? What are some of the learning styles you see in your kids? One of my sons, the one who goes to school in Phoenix, he learned all of his math facts on a trampoline because he could not sit still. And probably if I had been really paying attention, he would have been, you know, like diagnosed ADHD or something. However, at 21 years old, we were kind of giggling one night about it with his girlfriend's parents, who said, you know, we were watching him one day. We were outside on the patio, and he was sitting in our living room talking to our daughter, and he was like this the entire time. He was up and down, and he'd sit next to her, and then he'd walk around, and we said, this kid cannot sit still. And I said, I know. Like, from the day he was born, he walked out of me. Like, he was just moving around, and he paces when he... That is not a kid I could sit next to me for 3 hours. I couldn't sit him next to me for 3 minutes. I used to read aloud to them. We have just a different dynamic now, so I still read aloud. But at that time, when I had so many of these little kids, I would say, everybody grab a beach towel, lay out in the family room, and I'll read aloud to you, but you have to stay on your beach towel. This child, to this day, at 21 years old, will say, that was the worst. I hated that, because he had to stay on a beach towel still. So that is, again, not a kid that I'm going to have a very heavy, got to sit down, got to write, got to pay attention, got to listen curriculum. I had to get really creative with him. Okay? So think about that with your own kids, or you'll go nuts. So maybe less about how they learn and more about how you can get to the end of the year sane. All right? Some helps for that if you're not really familiar with learning styles and you want, you know, a little bit of a brush up or whatever. Talkers, Watchers, and Doers by Sherry Fuller. The Big What Now Book of Learning Styles by Carol Barnier. Incidentally, Carol Barnier, her stuff on this is fantastic. She herself will tell you she's a person who can't sit still. So she relates very much to kids like that. If you have a kid that is bouncing off the ceiling, Carol Barnier is your gal. The Way They Learn by Cynthia Tobias. It's just interesting to sort of see that in a kid, right? I can say, oh, I can hand this child a novel, unabridged, and they will sit and read it for 4 hours, but not this child, okay? All right, so where, additionally to, you know, for all the other things we're thinking about, goals, character, learning styles, what's going on in your life, where is your child in terms of writing and reading skills? You're going to need to ask yourself if the curriculum you're looking at is appropriate on a skill level that matches where your child is, all right? Don't be afraid to start a grade level lower if you need to. For that kid who's maybe not a strong reader or not really into school, it's okay. It's all right. Lay the pride aside. It isn't about you. It's just about the way God's crafted that kiddo. Or if they need to be bumped up a little bit. I'm actually bumping my sixth grader to eighth grade next year. She's a December birthday, and it's time. She needs to be pushed a little bit. So we're just skipping seventh grade entirely. That's what was going to work for her. If you're pulling kids out of a traditional school environment, I know that's really weird to get out of the grade level thing, but give yourself that freedom to do that. You have all that freedom to say, whoa, we need to back up here, okay? I'm going to confess to you that I'm that homeschooling mom that, let's see, one, two, three, four, yeah, four of my oldest four, every single one of them did this little thing where they told me they were doing their math in high school. Some of you, are you laughing because you know this? Yeah. And then you check, and you're like, it's like 3 months. They haven't done math. And so that was a lot of math those summers those kids got to do. And if they didn't catch up, I'm sorry. You know what? We're not going on to algebra if you have not finished that pre-algebra and don't understand what we're doing. Homeschooling allows us the opportunity to get a kid to mastery in things, and that's not always going to look like grade level. Okay? So you're free to move things around, change things up. you want to make sure, particularly in a subject like math, that those skills are there before you move on. So make sure they're there, and don't worry about what the grade level says. All right, now, as homeschool curriculums have expanded, oh my goodness, the choices that I didn't have 20 years ago that we have now, it's fantastic. But here's some things you're going to want to look for as you're looking at all of the options, okay? First of all, do you need to be an expert on the subject to teach this curriculum? Walk away from it, okay? I'm just going to tell you right now, if you have to be an expert on that subject to use that curriculum, mom who's nursing a baby and trying to get dinner on the table and laundry and get kids to soccer, walk away, okay? This is not your curriculum. If you have one child and it's a high schooler and you've got all this awesome time to walk alongside of them and learn alongside of them and do chemistry with them, then that, maybe that's your curriculum. Do you see? Okay. Does it provide the answers to all the quizzes and tests? That seems like an obvious thing that they would do that, but not so much. Back in the day, and I'm not even a bushwhacking homeschooler, we were kind of the second wave when we started 20 years ago, there were actually homeschool curriculums out there that didn't have the answers, didn't have a teacher's manual or answers to things. That's a deal killer for me. If I've got to do the math in my head to correct your paper, it's not happening. So, does it provide the answers to all quizzes and tests? Does it have samples of projects or photos of activities, particularly if you're not a non-crafty mom like me? Don't show me all the things I need, the construction paper and the paper, and then tell me how to do it. That'll never happen, but is there a picture of it, or is there some way that I can see online or something what this project is supposed to look like? Does it include printable worksheets? They don't all have to provide this, but if it's a curriculum that's telling you need to go gather this or you need to do that, or you've got a child like my trampoline guy who would never do a notebooking page on his own because he was also allergic to pencils. Do you have kids like that who just are allergic to pencils? Yeah, that's that child. It is really an amazing miracle he's finished 2 years of college, I have to tell you. It's mind-blowing to us. He was our least academic kid, and he's doing really well as a communications major, so go figure. But printable worksheets, could I print something out? I don't have to go find a map of Nairobi. You know, it's there, I can print it out. Great, here's your map of Nairobi. That's the kind of stuff you're looking for to make life a little bit easier. Does it include lists of supplemental materials and resources? If you want to go to the library and look up everything on frogs that you just studied in this science curriculum, does it have a list of great books to look for so you don't have to do all this researching? Does it provide a sample lesson plan? This is particularly important in high school curriculum. I need to know where we're going, some sort of a syllabus of sorts, so that I know what it is that how I'm supposed to be teaching this. And then lastly, a lot of us need to consider the ROI. What's your return on investment? Can I resell this? Is it legal for me to resell this? Will they allow me to do that? And if I do that, is this a curriculum a lot of people are looking for? Okay? You can find that out on resale boards. I know, I'm not sure if HSLDA still has a resale board. They used to. I know the Well-Trained Mind, thewelltrainedmind.com has a great sale and swap board. So you can find those places online. People sell on eBay as well. You might want to look at that. If you really need to get every dollar back, you're going to want to look, can I resell this, or is this something nobody wants? Okay? All right. I'm losing my voice, so I'll do my best. All right. The other thing you can think about in terms of money is that if you're buying something and it seems super expensive, how many kids do you have that might use that product? So, for example, teaching textbooks is $185, or it was when I wrote this. But I have 8 kids, and if all 8 kids use that same teaching textbooks text, that's $23 per child. Suddenly, that's a very reasonable curriculum, okay? So lots of things we reused in our home, the Veritas Press high school textbooks that we've used, 5 kids have used those. So you see, then suddenly maybe that $100 curriculum seems very reasonable if you're purchasing that. All right, what about subjects that make you feel overwhelmed to tackle, like, oh, I can't teach that, I can't do that? Look for choices that allow kids to have help via DVDs, like teaching textbooks is a good example of that. I believe Bob Jones University Press has a lot of online stuff, computer programs, online classes. Memoria Press has online classes. Veritas Press has online classes. Classical Academic Press has online classes. If you need that kind of help, go for it, okay? great adjunct, great walking alongside of you as a homeschooler. All right. Yes. I'm actually a really big fan of online classes, and I never was when my kids were younger, but as they've gotten older, it's fantastic for them to be accountable to somebody other than me. So that math that didn't get done for 3 months would never have happened with somebody else. It's just our human nature, I think. And yes, I would love it if they would be completely, perfectly obedient to their mom and finish their math, but I have human kids. They're sinners, and they will often do better for somebody else. And that online person, that online presence in that live class online is just sometimes what it takes for certain kids. So don't be afraid to go that direction if that's what you need. All right, so I'm going to talk a little bit about different curriculum options out there, what's really prevalent in the homeschool community, what lots of people use. You may have heard some of these things or some of these names and wondered, I don't understand what that is or what that means. So we're going to go through these really quickly. If you know what they are, I apologize. You're welcome to just tune me out. But if not, let's go through these. Have you heard of Charlotte Mason? Okay. Anybody not familiar with Charlotte Mason? Not heard of her? Okay. All right. A little bit? Okay. So she was a British educator from the early 1800s, or 1800s, early 1900s. Okay. And her big thing was that all of life was how we learned. All of it. Like everything we're doing, we organically do this all in everything. So we're going to create an environment that nurtures that child. We're going to take him outside. We're going to study nature. We're going to live this life of an education. And her schooling still affects schools in the UK today. I was actually just reading a book recently that was written in the 80s, I believe, and they said something about Charlotte Mason College, and I thought, oh, that's so interesting. So she really impacted education in the United Kingdom. And lots of homeschoolers have been drawn to what she does or did because it's a lifestyle of learning. She talked about living books. And a living book is simply a book that sort of stands the test of time. I'm sure you could think of a living book right now or off the top of your head. Babysitter's Club is not a living book. Okay? So a book that's sort of transfixed into one period of time and doesn't really bridge all ages and all situations is not a living book, but Pride and Prejudice is. Do you see? Okay, so what kind of living books are we giving our kids? Great literature. Beautiful things like, I'm trying to think of the last thing. Oh, the kids and I just recently finished reading The Bronze Bow to them, and it's the story of ancient Israel. No, I'm sorry, Israel in Jesus' time. And it was written, I think, probably in the 60s or 70s. So it's not a today book, and it doesn't talk about today things, but the situation and the characters and the things they're facing, that's everybody all across time that faces these situations and these things. That's what a living book is, or a living education, and that's Charlotte Mason. So if you're interested in Charlotte Mason, you can look for simplycharlottemason.com or ambleside.online.org. Okay, next would be classical education. This is actually a lot of how we've homeschooled in our own home. Although I'd say as I've gotten older, I'm a little more eclectic, kind of pull a lot of little things in, a little bit of Charlotte Mason, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. But this was gave us just a real good framework. So the classical education framework is called the Trivium. And it splits up into three different learning ages. That's what I want to say. It splits up kids... oh my goodness, you guys, it is the end of the day and I'm losing it. Let me look at my notes so I can say this right to you. It's a three-part process of training the mind. How's that? Is that better than what I was trying to do? Okay. So the first would be the grammar stage, okay? The grammar stage are not because you're just studying English for the first few years, but because these are the years that are the building blocks for learning in all the rest of your life, okay? Grammar is the foundation for language. It's actually why we got the term grammar schools. So if you think about like maybe kindergarten or preschool up until maybe fifth or sixth grade, that's your grammar stage. This is where you're laying a foundation. By fifth grade, your child's mind begins to think a little more analytically. So when, you know, junior highers say, but why? But I don't, why? Why? It isn't necessarily that they're being sassy or disobedient. A lot of times it's just like, I really want to know why. You're telling me I have to wear my green shirt. Why? Why? I want to know why. So that's your logic stage. Give me some reasons. I want to analyze this. I need to know what this means. It's when they start to pay attention to cause and effect, okay, and the relationship between all of the things going on in our world. And then the final phase of a classical education is the rhetoric stage, which builds on the grammar and the logic stage. This is the high school years when kids can now form a thesis and then prove it. All right? So I like to say that a classical education in the grammar stage is, this is Abraham Lincoln, this was the war between the states, these are the facts. That's what you teach a grammar student. And then in the logic stage, you say, why do you think this was important in American history? Why do you think there was a war between the states? Why do you think Lincoln made the choice he did? And then in the rhetoric stage, they're saying, let me tell you why, Mom. Here we go. This is what I believe. I don't believe that that was correct. I believe that states' rights were not okay, you know, whatever it is. And then you say, great, you go prove that to me. Write that essay. Tell me why you believe that. Do you see? So you're not teaching rhetoric stuff to the grammar student. The grammar student's just sort of like hammering in little pegs in the wall of all those little facts that then they can draw upon as they reach logic and rhetoric, okay? So classical education also is heavy on the classics. Classic literature, classic music, classic art, all of those things. Veritas Press, Memoria Press, Classical Academic Press, and actually I need to take Area 127 off my slide because they are no longer in business, but there you go. Okay? Now, textbooks. I am here to tell you that if it feels safe and it feels like it's going to be oxygen to you to just buy the whole first grade year from Abeka, please do that. Okay? It's okay. Even if the super homeschooler blogging and doing her thing, you know, next door to you does all this amazing sugar cookie maps of India, you know, like whatever those things are, and you're saying, I'm going to die over here. I can barely get dinner on the table. I just need to use textbooks. It's okay to do that. All right? I think particularly for new homeschoolers, they often say to me, well, it just kind of feels safe. Like, I don't really know. So, and I say, do that thing. And then surprisingly, a lot of times by December or January, they're just ready to kind of, like, they got their feet wet and they're ready to kind of try something new or pull something else in. That's great. Okay? This is my stack of everything that Bright Ideas Press carries just because I love that company. So traditional method, that's what textbooks are. Some examples would be Abeka, Bob Jones, Apologia, in their high school, junior high school science stuff. And then you can use textbooks within other methods as well, all right? In our classical homeschool, we use Rod and Staff Math with no changes. Like, I've never changed that. It works, K through 6 in our family, so that's what we do, textbook math. That's the way it goes, all right? Unit studies. Everybody familiar? Nobody. Is anybody not familiar with what a unit study approach is? Okay, I'll go fast. So just real quickly, you take one topic, you study it in depth, you cover all disciplines at once. So you say, we're going to study tide pools this year. Let's talk about the environment. Let's talk about water. Let's talk about the weather. Let's talk about colors and, you know, all of these things, all of the disciplines around tide pools. That's a unit study approach. Konos. Heart of Wisdom, Homeschool in the Woods. Those are some resources for unit studies. Okay, and then the last approach would be unschooling. This would be interest-driven, delight-directed. Those are some terms you'll hear bandied about in an unschooling approach. I have this had, actually, he's passed away now, but the man who was in charge of the New Zealand Homeschool Federation, which was the big homeschooling organization in New Zealand. He passed away several years ago from brain cancer. But we were in his home about 10 years ago. These were just amazing people. He decided he wanted to homeschool his kids, and they're in their 30s now. Actually, you know what? One of his sons works at Rainbow Resources, I just realized. Anyway, he said, I knew I had a choice to make. I could either hide my homeschooling, or I could walk into the Ministry of Education, announce what I was going to do, and like I knew what I was talking about. And so that's what he did. He just walked into the offices there, and he said, I'm going to educate my kids at home. And they kind of said, okay. And he said, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and what forms do I need to fill out? And he said, I walked out like, whoa, you know, because he said, I wasn't that confident, but I just acted like I was. And this, of course, is in the late 70s, early 80s. And so he said, I read this thing from America where there were more homeschoolers going on, and it was about delight-directed learning, and I thought, that sounds great. I'm really interested in nuclear physics, so I'm gonna teach my kids about nuclear physics. So I got a book, and we all gathered them all around, and we just talked about it, and I got them excited, and it was great. And about a week later, I realized, oh, they meant their delight-directed, not mine. And so that is just why I love that story, because, you know, it's true, though. We parents get excited about things. You know, in your home, it may be baseball that all your kids love because you love baseball. And for me, this, I know this is really weird, but I'm a weird mom. It's opera. That's my major. So my girls go to the opera with me, and it's classical music and that kind of thing. But my husband has his stuff that he's gotten the kids involved in, and the dog, and the, you know, and right? So in your home, there is that delight, and it's directing your learning of your home. But also, it's what kids are excited about and what kids want to study and go for, okay? Unschooling, for me, felt a little, it's just kind of scary. So I haven't jumped too much into unschooling, but if you want some help, that sounds like a good fit for your family, thesetemporarytents.com. She has a great site on how their family educates with homeschool or unschooling, and then christiananschooling.com, okay? I do know that the people I know that have used unschooling, their kids are really getting educated. I mean, I think you call it that, but you guys are really doing a lot, probably a lot more than I am. So don't let that scare you if it seems like, oh, that sounds like you're not educating at all. The unschoolers I know have been really well educated. So, okay, so do you need to choose one of these approaches for your homeschooling? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Like I said, we started in that direction of classical education in our homeschool, but I walk out in that vendor hall. I bought a stack of stuff this morning to take home to my kids. I'm always looking for new things, fresh approaches, things to light a fire, things to get them excited, and it's not necessarily classical education. It's just whatever I'm pulling in, or I read something and I think, oh, that sounds fantastic. That would really match that kid, okay? My current 9-year-old is not a great sit and do workbooks kind of kid. So I've had to become very creative with him to keep that fire lit within him. That's okay. You know, you can start out in one direction and say, this will really work for us, and next year say, ugh, I need to jump ship. It's okay. It's all right. And I would just encourage you, if my husband were up here with me, he would say to you guys, it's okay if your wife buys an expensive curriculum and gets to January and realizes this does not work for our family. It's hard to bite that financial bullet, but she needs to have the freedom to say this just wasn't a fit, okay? And wives, you need to have that feeling, I mean, that freedom too, to say, you know what? I really thought this was going to be great. This is really not great, okay? And there's something to be said for kind of soldiering through something too. Sometimes I just look at a kid and I go, it doesn't matter what English we would use, you would fight me. So we're going to march right through this one. But if something is just a horrible failure in your family, sell it, move on, okay? All right, so I want to open up for questions because I feel like this is a workshop where people want to say, what about this thing and what about that? And I will talk about specific curriculum. I have no problem doing that. I rep no companies at all. I have my favorites. There may be some I don't. I can't give you a lot of information on, but as much as I can help you, that's what I'm here for, okay? Unlike teachers in traditional classrooms, we have lots of freedom to choose from all kinds of different things, all right? Give yourself that freedom. It's scary, but it's absolutely beautiful, and you'll watch kids really bloom doing that. So let's have some questions, if anybody. Yes?
So what are your favorites?
What are my favorites? In what subject?
literature. Like, I've been doing Bob Jones University.
Uh-huh.
It's my older kids.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So you're talking about literature in terms of just things for them to read, or are you also having them analyze literature and that kind of stuff too?
I'd like them to be able to have good comprehension.
Yes.
Learning aspects of literature. Like, you know.
Yeah. Like, oh, it's a cliff. This is called a cliffhanger and that kind of thing. Yeah. Right. Yes. Okay. So how old are your kids? Okay, they're right in there. Okay, good, good. All right, so yes, since she brought up Sunlight, she's asking about literature and what our favorites have been. So I do love Sunlight, but I will tell you that I've only used a whole Sunlight package for a high schooler. and it was fantastic. So I can't speak so much to the younger ones because we, just the way we've done this, I love the mystery of history so much that I plan our entire year around what year of mystery of history we're in. So for me, this has just been an easy way to sort of like narrow in, okay, so we're in ancients this year, we really are, we're in ancients this year, and so like I said, we read the Bronze Bow aloud, I'm handing them books that are in that, you know, that time period, not exclusively, we also read some Lemony Snickets this year, that was interesting, hadn't read those before, but that's the kind of stuff I'm doing with younger kids. Once I get into that junior high and high school, yeah, I think that is the time to start saying, okay, now we need to do some analyzing, some things like that. So we've used lightning literature, and that was my high schooler, who's my oldest child now, who's a fantastic reader, loves literature, loves great films, you know, storytelling. And it was a good fit for him because I let him choose. So I said, what do you want to study here in high school? And he chose Christian British authors. That whole unit study there, and he just ate that up that whole year. Sunlight in high school. Oh, I'm trying to think. What else we have used? I'm going to think of it tonight. I'll be lying in my hotel room like, ah, oh, that. Yeah, let me think on that.
We really love mystery history. Uh-huh. It's definitely anything we've ever done we're most passionate about.
Yay!
And that's where I see their eyes light up.
Yeah.
They're asking questions.
Yes. Yeah,
so
it does, and that's why our year is around. Yeah, around our mystery of history year.
I mean, to take a year where we just use her recommendations for books and things could be just focused on.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Freedom,
yep.
That's what we're doing.
Yes. Yeah, and I'll have a lot of conversations with just sort of organic conversations, but literature's in my wheelhouse, you know. And I think for somebody who's not, you probably need to pick up something that helps you kind of have those discussions. But for me, if I'm reading aloud to my kids or we're listening to a book on a CD or, you know, something like that, I'm stopping it and saying, oh, did you guys catch that? You know, or who do you think is the one that's doing the crime, you know, or whatever. We're having those sort of just organic conversations around literature because that's their mom, you know. So it just comes naturally, yeah. We don't talk about math. We don't have any discussions about math, no. So you said something that kind of jogged my thinking. Oh, one thing just about giving kids things to read. For a lot of years, I gave my kids specific lists. And so it was books I wanted them to read that were biographies. These were the categories: biography, history, literature, and science. So there were four categories. And on their quiet reading hour, they had to be reading one of those books from one of the categories. It was great for most of my kids until these two that I'm homeschooling right now that kind of were like, ugh. And so I took away all my titles out of those categories, and now we just go to the library and I say you need to pick a biography, a history book, a literature book, and a science book, and then they choose what they want, and all of a sudden they're enjoying reading again. So that's very easy to do, you know. I look at sunlight lists, I look at the 1,000 Great Books list. If you Google 1,000 Great Books Classical Homeschooling, it'll come up, because I can't remember the URL, but it's 1,000 Great Books in all kinds of age categories. And I used to just take that list to the library. Before the library was online, I used to take that list, print out to the library, and we would just go down, you know, and check out great picture books and great, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah. Yes. Okay.
And I'm 7th kindergartner now, like in first grade. And I feel like I'm struggling with balance of what I did when I was a kindergarten teacher.
Yes.
And then trying to balance and wanting my son to have all those same experiences that he had and that he would have had in like a traditional kindergarten classroom. But also when I'm trying to choose curriculum for him now, we don't know how long we'll be doing homeschooling.
Okay. Hard. Yeah.
Or, you know, private school. And I really enjoyed this year. That's what we're doing. Next year, we're just going to take it year to year.
But
we have fully committed to homeschool.
Okay. So, just so you know, that was me, and then he graduated from our homeschool. That was our firstborn. Said, I will never do this. And then, yeah, same thing. So just warning you. It might happen. Yeah.
You know, I was looking at some of the curriculums out here, and it seems like you have to start with it and commit to it. And
oh, that's a good question. Yeah.
As opposed to just like, we're going to do this one year, and next year we're going to do this one year, and
yeah.
Up first grade. Second
yeah.
Grade, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yeah.
We're going to be doing preschool, and I'm going to say, you have to pick something and then commit to it.
Commit to it. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think actually it's pretty easy to switch. But it doesn't feel like it in the beginning because it feels scary. Even as a classroom teacher, what I know from classroom teachers is that homeschooling is an entirely different animal. You know, and they'll say that like, whoa, you know, this is a total paradigm shift. So, Let me start here and say, I would choose what looks the best to you to be a one-on-one with that child, because that's what you're doing, right? A one-on-one kindergarten year with that child? Okay, so I would say all of the things I talked about before, like, what are we trying to accomplish this year? You know, if for you, is it a traditional scope and sequence in the state of Indiana, you know, or whatever state you're in, then do that. I actually used to print out the scope and sequences from our school district just so I knew. That's just, I was like, okay, we got this. And what I found, interestingly, is that we were always way above it, or way beyond it, because that's any one-on-one homeschool environment. I mean, any one-on-one schooling environment. I'm not a fabulous teacher. I don't have, like, amazingly smart kids, but it was one-on-one. So suddenly, your child has this freedom to go fly in some area that maybe not in a classroom because there's the least common denominator, right? You know, you've got to kind of keep everybody moving. And the same goes for the other end of the scale when they need a little extra help, you know, not getting that reading like they should or not, then you're gonna slow down a little bit. You know what I'm saying? So I would go out there and I would look at stuff and maybe check it with what you know to be a kindergarten scope and sequence or pretty common one, you know, and say, all right, are we hitting this, and this? Okay, then I feel good about that. And this looks like a good fit for me as a teacher for this child. And then do that again in first grade, if you decide to homeschool for first grade. You know, you may find something that works beautifully for you, and you're like, okay, like Mystery of History, I didn't hit that until I think my oldest was like maybe in fourth grade when we found Mystery of History. And then it was like, oh yeah, we're committed, you know. But that's not everything. There's some things that I'm like, not so much, you know. Or, oh, we're going to try this. No, we're not doing that this year, you know. So, but if it makes you feel like, okay, I've really got to keep this because I want my options to be open, then print out some scopes and sequences, you know, each year and kind of see where you're hitting all of those things. So I think you're probably going to find, unless you have a child with learning disabilities, you know, you're going to find that you're going to move faster because it's amazing what you get accomplished in 45 minutes with a kindergartner at home, you know. So, does that help? Does that answer your question? Okay. Yes. Yes. Okay. Okay. Yes. Okay. 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 I would just develop some questions. Think about things you can ask, especially if you know the story they're reading or the book they're reading. So I would do that a lot. And there are some things like the high school curriculum we've used is the Veritas Press. What's it called? Somebody help me out. You guys don't know. I'm sorry? Say it again. No, it's not the online one. It's called Omnibus. Thank you. Oh, you're welcome. Well, I said thank you to myself. Omnibus had questions in the book for me to ask. So there are literature guides. What's the literature guide one that's out there? Oh, my goodness. It's called something literature guides. That's so helpful, isn't it? Again, do you know, Amanda? It is. It's all yellow. Thank you. Look for the booth with all yellow. Total Language Plus. That's it. Total Language Plus. Thank you. So if you want some good lit guides for the younger grades, go grab some of those. And then there'll be like maybe a Little House on the Prairie. So then she's reading Little House on the Prairie, but you've got the lit guide. And you can say, hey, you know, let's answer this. Also, I know Veritas Press, and they're not here, are they? Veritas Press has literature guide books that are really fun. They have little projects they can do or like little copy work, you know, maybe something from the book. My kids are listening to Chronicles of Narnia right now, and I printed out copy work, you know, that some fabulous blogger made Chronicles of Narnia copy work. And so I had her, you know, I just printed them out, and they did that as copy work. They were just great lines from Prince Caspian or something like that, you know. So if you feel like you want a lit guide, go grab lit guides. You know, pick some books that you think they'd like to read and pick up some of those literature guides for sure. Okay? Otherwise, again, it's my thing. I love, you know, I love to read. So I just ask. And I was a voracious reader as a kid, so my kids are reading a lot of the things that I read. And so I'm like, oh, okay, so when they go back to the house and the dresses aren't there in the 100 dresses, what did you think? You know what I mean? Like, I know those things and we can have those conversations. But if not, go to Total Language Plus and look at what they have. Yeah. Yes?
During the classical approach, you had mentioned the grammar and then the logic.
Yes. I know.
And I'm not sure. She's struggling. That's one of
Of course she is.
She's
yeah.
Is it because she, cognitively, she's not there?
Well, if you ask me, I think so. I mean, you know, I'm not an educational specialist or an expert, but when I look at the development of the kids in my homeschool, absolutely. Absolutely. And some 9-year-olds could do that, but a lot of 9-year-olds can't do that. So I think and I've seen a lot of Common Core stuff come through our doors, and I look and I think, wow, that's asking a lot of a second grader or a third grader or whatever. And I get the goal. I understand the goal of where they're trying to go. I've tried to be really diplomatic about the Common Core thing because I live in California, and we will probably be the last bastion. Us in New York will probably be the last two states. And so I've tried to say, all right, I've got teacher friends, and I've got friends with kids in public schools. I'm not going to be, you know, I want to see this. I want to be educated about this and see what's going on. And I do. I look at some of that stuff, and I think, I get the goal. They're trying to produce thinkers. That's a good thing. You know, that's good. But we're asking a lot of a 7-year-old or an 8-year-old or a 9-year-old. They're not, I don't think they're quite there, and that might exactly be why she's struggling. Okay.
So I'm not, you know, I haven't raised her.
Okay.
So there's a huge educational gap because my teaching has been college and high school.
Okay.
And an accelerated high school.
Okay.
So,
wow. Yeah.
We're used to that critical thinking.
Yes.
From that point.
Yes.
So I'm not sure where that.
Yeah.
Do I push that critical thinking, or do I say, hey, let's take this?
Is she struggling more than just academically? Like, is she emotionally struggling at school? Like, I hate this. I don't want to go.
Test anxiety.
Yeah.
She lost her mom a year ago. So
okay.
There's a lot of different factors there.
Yeah.
I just told my fiance, I said, I really think we need more reminding.
Yeah, yeah. This would be a beautiful year to let her breathe, you know, and pull her back to a grammar stage and say, we're going to do a lot of reading aloud. We're going to keep plugging forward here, but let's just take a breath. And what I've seen, just by way of encouragement, our oldest is 23. We have a 21. We have a 9. These are guys that have, you know, good jobs. They're headed into higher education, you know, that kind of stuff. They're doing really well. And I was pregnant or nursing for 15 years. You know, there was a new baby every other year. I found our youngest child in a coma. That's why he has brain damage. And he had a nasty virus that left 6 holes in his brain. 6 months later, I ran over our 5-year-old with our 12-passenger van. A year after that, I found our 8-year-old in septic shock, and we spent 3 weeks in the ICU and 3 surgeries for a ruptured appendix that went septic. We moved. There was a miscarriage. You know, do you see that? Like, there was stuff, like lots and lots and lots of stuff. And when I look back, I think, I don't know how my oldest got educated. I mean, I know we put one foot in front of the other every day, and we did the next thing, and I am a very academic mom. I want my kids to be well-educated, so it was serious about it. But you guys, I do not know how my 23-year-old got such a good education in spite of me. And I say that to you because there were lots of years of having to just, you guys, it's a new baby. We're going to listen to a book on tape, you know? Or there were years of saying, we all just need to take a break here. And it still worked. We still got to the finish line with kids who are doing well in college, with, you know, a son who runs his own business. Who, you know, like it works itself out. So give yourself a little freedom with her to say, we can take a year here to manage the other things going on in her life. In the long run, that may be what catapults her forward faster, if she's had a year to recover and breathe and heal, you know? So, okay. Yes? I am not. Well, just the name, but yeah, I'm not. It's a preschool curriculum? No? Oh, okay, then it's not what I'm thinking of. All right. Is it something you're looking at doing? Okay. Does anybody else have experience with Easy Peasy? You do? Okay. Oh, online. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, all right. Yeah. I would take the list, you know, and say, would this fit for our family? You know, maybe it'll be great. Yes.
So my wife and I are thinking about starting homeschooling our 5-year-old.
Okay. Yeah. No. But I say that as a mom who had 8 5-year-olds and, you know, was like old hat by the time I got to. But I think the mom who needs a curriculum with a 5-year-old is the mom who feels like, I really need to have a framework. I need to have something that I follow. And there's nothing wrong with that. But if you guys are like, you know what, I think we can put this together ourselves. In fact, that's our story. We were on our way to a charter school meeting when we decided to homeschool our son. And I already knew what I wanted to do, and we were on our way, and my husband said, why are we going to this? And I said, because it's kind of what everybody in our area does when they homeschool. And he said, do you know what you want to do? And I said, yeah. And he goes, let's go to the movies. So we went to the movies that night, and I just picked and chose, you know, what I wanted for that kindergarten year. So absolutely. You know, you can say, I want to use this. We're going to start with this math thing, or we're going to do this thing, or don't do social studies. Don't do history. Don't, you know, give her lots or him lots of time. Yeah, yeah. Teach them to read, you know. So, yeah. English, learning to read stuff or English, like. A boy. Yeah. A lot of listening. I mean, especially if he's an auditory learner. Here's the thing. My husband is highly educated and he hates to read. So he listens to everything. And I think to myself, is that bad? I know a lot of men in particular who don't like to read and they listen. But they'll listen to anything. They'll listen to audiobooks, they'll listen to podcasts, they'll listen to, and I think, is that bad? I don't know. So I would give a mix of some things. I would say, hey, I want you to read, and I would say, I want you to read out loud. That's a good skill. Everybody needs to develop an ability to read out loud. But I wouldn't camp on that being the thing that, like, the hill we're going to die on. You know, I want that child to love to learn to read, or to love to hear stories, or to love to be read to, or to, do you know what I mean? So, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I know. And so I've had a lot of a balance, especially my 9-year-old's the same way. And so I've had a lot of balance between you need to read this and, okay, yes, you can read the Calvin and Hobbes comic books ad nauseum because that's what he does, you know. But balance, like, okay, you also need to read. Yeah. Grammar and English for a struggling reader. I would look at Memoria Press's stuff. Their early like their pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, first grade kind of stuff. It's a little gentle. Memoria, yeah, is out there. I love pathway readers and their workbooks. You'll find them. I probably, Rod and Staff carries them. They're actually Amish curriculum, and they're readers that are the greatest little stories. And the first level, you read the story, and then they read, like, one line. You know what I mean? So you're like, oh, and then he took the cart, and he put the dog on the cart, and they went down the hill, and they lost the cart, toppled. And then the line would be like, he lost the cart, you know. So it's not so overwhelming. They get the whole story, but then they read the one line. And then you graduate on to, you know, regular reader type things that then get harder and harder and harder. But the stories are compelling for kids. There's a story about a little girl who gets in trouble on her birthday and how that, you know, plays out. Or the kid who ate the sugar when he wasn't, you know, he snuck around and then he got sick. You know, just like real kind of kid stories. And then their corresponding workbooks are excellent, thorough phonics, following directions, comprehension questions, and things like that. And even if you are having him dictate to you and you're writing in those answers, at least for that first level or two, that's okay. You know, I would rather have a kid who's with me in spirit than fight them with the pencil all the time. Because eventually, you know, they're not going to be in high school with you going, okay, dictate it to me, I'll write it for you. But in first grade, second grade, especially a boy, I'll go halfway with you, you know. In second grade, I'll go halfway. You write that one, I'll write the next one. You write that one, I'll write the next one. That kind of thing. So whatever it is you choose, do that. Mix it up. Don't die on that hill. You know, you want them to love it at some point. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Pray. Cry. Sell it. No. Yeah, actually, and I'm sort of one of those, sort of, I am. I'm one of those people that keeps, we're about done, so I'll finish up here, but that keeps reading new stuff, new homeschool stuff. Like you said, easy peasy, you know, whoever said the easy peasy thing, I'm going to go really take a look at that because that's been mentioned to me before, and now I'm like, oh yeah, I really need to go take a look at that. So I'm always doing that 20 years in, and I'm an old dog. Like I'm set. You know, we've never changed our math curriculum, and we've some things like that. Like it's mystery of history, man. We're out. We're in it, you know. So, but I'm still always kind of, and if you kind of just stay aware and listen, and kinda, then maybe when you hit that January and that curriculum was a bomb, you would know what might be a good thing to try next, you know, or you'd put some feelers out, you know, like, hey, what are you guys using? This was terrible for us, and I've got a kinesthetic learner, and this is not going to work, you know, and so, yeah. I know. We all want guarantees. That's the hard part, and kids are humans, and they're not, yeah, so, yes. One last question.
I have 11-year-old.
Okay. 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 I do. Do you? Are you opposed to an online class?
No.
Mr. D Math. Mr. MrDMath.com. Yeah. I just reviewed it on the preschoolers and, oh, here, let me give you guys where to find. So you can find me here, but that preschoolersandpeace.com down there, I just reviewed Mr. D Math on that website. My daughter just did his ACT math prep course. I'm sold. He's fantastic. He does algebra, and he does pre-algebra, algebra, algebra one. He does, I think there's calculus and like all the way. Yeah, yeah, yeah. 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 Go look at that one first. Yeah. We've also used the online classes from a website called CurClick, which is CurClick.com. So you could go look at their math classes too. And we've used those with some good success. My daughter did pre-algebra with CurClick last year before I knew about Mr. D, and yeah. So...